It is Friday, May 10th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On this edition of Ozarks, how the Arkansas legislature addressed the future of charter schools in Arkansas.
Plus, the Australian production Boats comes to Fayetteville.
And Efren White has a new song for us.
But first, the news from NPR. It is Friday, May 10th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Theater Squared concludes its seventh season with Next to Normal, with performances through this Sunday at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studio. This emotional musical focuses on a family trying to take care of each other. Tickets and more information for Next to Normal available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
Ahead on Ozarks, I'll have my weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from the City Wire about an attempt to buy Arkansas Best Freight, and why tobacco and internet sales taxes are of interest in Arkansas this week.
Plus, two actors, two microphones, and a jacket that turns into a circus. We offer a peek inside the creation of the play Boats on stage this weekend. And Efren White plays a brand new song later on the show.
First, as talk of the Affordable Care Act shifts from the state's plan for insuring low-income workers to other aspects of its implementation, many businesses with 50 or more full-time employees are deciding whether to provide insurance for employees as required in the law or pay a fine. Greg Hatcher is CEO of the Hatcher Agency, which is the state's largest independent insurer. He tells Talk Business Arkansas his clients are all providing insurance since they were already doing that anyway.
If you were offering coverage prior to the law being passed, there's no way you'll drop it because your employees would go screaming if you took away their coverage.
Sure.
You'd pay more in the penalty. It's only the guy who maybe who didn't have coverage that might not.
Hatcher says he is seeing those with more than 50 employees who are already insuring full-time staff but not part-timers considering offering their part-time workers coverage in order to avoid penalties. Companies of that size or larger will be required to provide health insurance to employees beginning January 1st.
Members of Arkansas's congressional delegation are pushing the Air Force to follow through on its promise to base two missions in western Arkansas. With the decision to scale back its A-10 force and remove planes from the 188th this fall, military leaders agreed to house a remotely piloted aircraft mission in Fort Smith. But Democratic Senator Mark Pryor says the new budget from the White House doesn't provide funding for it.
We have a letter from the Air Force Chief of Staff telling us that he's going to do X, Y, and Z, and guess what? You can't do that without money. So I was very unhappy when I saw that budget. And we had a chance yesterday to get the Air Force Chief of Staff in the committee, and I can tell you right now, after the first question I asked him, he knew he was in trouble because it's very clear that he hasn't yet honored the commitments he made to me and the Arkansas delegation.
Pryor says there are meetings planned to pressure the Air Force to honor the commitments made. Meanwhile, Republican Senator John Bozeman says he's concerned about a backlog in disability claims for veterans who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
It really has lagged behind. And so what we're trying to do is just hold everybody's feet to the fire in a way that's saying, you know, let us help. We'll give you the resources that you need. We all agree, though, that these things need to be done in timely fashion.
Bozeman says he has met with the Secretary of the Veterans Administration to see what can be done.
A local superintendent will soon be at the helm of the state's adoption of Common Core standards. Dr. Megan Witonski, the head of the Elkins School District since 2010, will take a new position with the Arkansas Department of Education. Starting July 1st, Witonski will become Assistant Commissioner in the Division of Learning Services. She replaces Dr. Laura Bednar, who has taken a job as Deputy Superintendent of the Pulaski County Special School District. Though the job has other responsibilities, such as charter schools and special education, the Common Core transition will be a major focus, as Arkansas is one of 45 states moving toward a common set of standards in language arts and math.
Fort Smith drivers should be aware that on Sunday, crews from the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department will be conducting a routine inspection of the Garrison Avenue Bridge. The inspection will require alternating lane closures on the bridge, weather permitting, between the hours of 7 a.m. and 5 p.m.
University of Arkansas in Fayetteville will again graduate a record number of students during commencement ceremonies tomorrow. This year, an estimated 3,700 students will receive degrees, about 1,000 more than graduated last year, and the largest graduating class in school history. The official graduate total, however, won't be known until next month after final grades are turned over to the registrar's office.
Though the Northwest Arkansas Naturals weren't at home last night, they couldn't avoid the rain. The Nats were up 2-1 against the Springfield Cardinals in the second inning when the game was called on account of the weather. The game will be made up tonight in a doubleheader in Springfield. The Razorback baseball team will open its final home series of the regular season tonight. The 14th-ranked Diamond Hogs will take on the unranked Tennessee Volunteers for three games this weekend at Baum Stadium. A fireworks show will follow tonight's game, which is scheduled to start at 6:35.
And finally, a bit of music news. Elton John is coming to Northwest Arkansas next month to perform during the annual Walmart Shareholders Conference. According to Kevin Kender of Northwest Arkansas Media, John will perform with special guest Ed Sheeran on June 4th. Also performing this year will be country music star Luke Bryan, who will perform on June 5th. Both concerts will take place in Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville, and Walmart and Sam's Club associates can reserve tickets to the shows beginning next Wednesday. As a side note, this month does mark the 40th anniversary of Elton John's 7x platinum album, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for mostly cloudy conditions with lows from 48 in northwest Arkansas to 53 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a 30% chance of afternoon showers and a high of 69 in northwest Arkansas and a 20% chance of afternoon showers and a high of 75 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 41 in northwest Arkansas to 49 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He's the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers politics, business, culture, and more for the entire listening area. And congratulations, Michael. We have our first Friday in May without snow.
Wow, that's pretty bad when we even have to mention that.
Usually it's the first Friday in May. This year, it's the second.
Oof.
If that's hard to understand, you're going to have to help me understand the latest machinations in this story about Arkansas Best Freight and possibly being there's a buyout attempt by someone that ABF is suing.
Yes, this is this is a small group of players all interacting at interesting levels. YRC Yellow Roadway Corp. They're based up in Overland Park, Kansas. They're probably about double the size of Arkansas Best Freight, which is owned by Arkansas Best Corp here in Fort Smith. And ABF and YRC have been entangled in a lawsuit. You know, ABF sued them to the tune of $750 million. In fact, that's ongoing now at the Court of Appeals in the Federal Court of Appeals in St. Louis. Essentially, ABF said that YRC and the Teamsters collaborated to give the YRC some better wage rates, and so. Complicating matters further, ABF and the Teamsters have been negotiating on a contract and just recently said they've agreed to a 5-year contract, and now it goes before the Teamsters for a vote. And then we come with this news that YRC has their CEO came to Fort Smith to visit with the Arkansas Best CEO, Judy McReynolds, to make an offer to buy the company, to buy ABF. And according to DC Velocity, which is a trade magazine that covers the trucking sector, he made an $18 a share bid, which I think they probably thought was a little low. Their ABF's trading below that, so it wasn't that much of a premium. But ABF generates about 78% of Arkansas Best revenue. I mean, it's the core of the company.
Right.
And I think just from folks in the Fort Smith area, this is another one of those "oh no" kind of things, or probably something a more colorful word than "no." But I doubt if YRC were to buy ABF, I doubt that they would keep the corporate headquarter complex. And we're talking, 500, 600, 700 good jobs. These are the kind of jobs any community wants. These corporate headquarter type jobs. And I was reminded, every once in a while we will hear a report from a NASA scientist who says, a potential Earth-destroying asteroid came within, a million miles of the planet yesterday. You think, whew, that was close. Well, it's the same thing with this. When I first heard that, I thought, wow, that was close. That could have been a bad deal. However, it's not over.
I was going to ask.
The message boards and some of the more, and the other story from this trade magazine suggests that YRC is not finished. So, and as we all know, with any negotiations, there are several rounds of negotiations, and this was the first round. And if we'll remember, you know, when Baldor was bought out back in 2010, 2011, you know, we learned later that there were several rounds made, that, I mean, three, four offers, and finally the pot got so sweet that the Baldor execs couldn't say no. So this bears watching. The last thing that the Fort Smith economy needs is for this to happen.
In the first part of 2013, tax numbers have been coming out, and fairly much for the state of Arkansas positive, but Arkansas tobacco tax revenue is down. Now, does this mean people are smoking less in Arkansas?
Well, it means a lot of things, and this was the weirdest story. Ryan Saylor worked on this story for us, and when we got working on it, we thought it would just be simple. We'd call, you know, Arkansas Department of Health or whoever, and they'd have some good answers. Well, it turns out we had to call four different state agencies and talk to five different people because these tobacco tax revenues are spread around to different programs, different either smoking programs, some of the tobacco tax revenue supports Arkansas's trauma system. So it turned out to be a bear of a story, frankly, to try to figure out what this means. And we still don't know exactly what it means, but the bottom line, what we're hearing is that there are probably fewer people smoking, but there are also people going to, you know, especially like Missouri. In Missouri, the cigarette tax rate is about 17 cents a pack. In Arkansas, it's $1.50. Mm. So it doesn't take long to add up. So if you buy a carton of cigarettes in Missouri, you're saving $10, $15, $20. And there's also the smuggling issue, and I think what we heard from officials is that happens more in East Arkansas, where people will buy, you know, boxes and boxes of cigarettes in Tennessee and Mississippi and bring them back across the border and sell them.
Bootlegging, basically.
So we have a black market in cigarettes. So, which, you know, any economics major is going to tell you that's what's happened. When you reach a certain price point, whether the price point is induced higher through tax rates or any other variable, you will see a black market enter. And I think to some extent that's probably what we're seeing in some of these areas. But it does bear watching. Of the major categories, funding categories in Arkansas, of course, the income tax and sales tax collections are the key, but this one's the tobacco tax is the only one that's down, and it's down about $10.3 million, which is to say this year it's about $188 million. Last year it was a little over close to $199 million. So it bears watching.
Speaking of taxes, the federal proposal to institute an internet tax has been in the headlines as well this week.
Right. Congressman Womack here from the 3rd District got a bill through the Senate. Essentially, it's convoluted, but essentially this provides states the ability to level the playing field, so to speak, by requiring online retailers to collect taxes on purchases they make on the Internet. And this was received. This has been one of the more interesting pieces of legislation. We're getting a lot of comments here at the City Wire. I'm getting emails from people who just can't believe that Congressman Womack, a Republican, would raise taxes. And he's, and of course, it's not my job to defend Womack or my job to defend any politician, frankly, but they're not raising taxes with this legislation. Essentially, what they're saying is that, let's say you have two businesses. One of them sells at a brick-and-mortar store, sells widgets, and another one sells the same widget but just online.
Right.
Right now, one of those businesses is not required to collect sales taxes, and the brick-and-mortar business is. And I think what this legislation says and what a lot of folks are saying is that, you know, that's not right. Every business selling the same widget should have to, you know, play by the same tax rule. And so that's what they're saying. And the other opposition is that, well, this is going to really hurt the small business guy or small business owner guy or lady who can't keep up with all the different tax laws around the country. Well, there's a provision in that if your sales, and I think the number is a million, if you don't, once you go over a million in internet sales, then you're required to keep up with the taxes. Other than that, you don't have to. So there is a provision to protect that small business owner. But this has drawn a lot of interest. I think there's a lot of confusion about this.
Well, Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers politics, business, culture, and more for the entire listening area. Have a good weekend, Michael.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
The Arkansas General Assembly this session passed several new laws concerning public school choice in Arkansas. Both have been controversial. Ozarks at-large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Charter schools first appeared on the state education landscape when the Arkansas Public Charter Schools Act was passed by the General Assembly in 1999. Charter schools are publicly funded, independently operated, experimental schools. Some are focused on the arts, some on technology, others on college prep. Across 239 public school districts, Arkansas counts 18 open enrollment public charter schools, open to any student across districts, with entry based on a blind lottery system. Arkansas also has 14 conversion charter schools. Those serve students within specific districts. Compared to some states, Arkansas has proved a limited number of charters. By comparison, Texas counts 571, California more than 1,000. Arkansas charter schools are accountable to the Arkansas Board of Education for academic results and fiscal practices. Charter school contracts must be renewed every 5 years. Until now, the State Board of Education had sole oversight and authorizing power, choosing which charters would live or die. But a new law passed by the Arkansas legislature changes that. Phyllis Stewart is chief of staff for the Arkansas Department of Education.
In the past, the Board of Education conducted the hearings for charter schools when a charter made application, you know, an entity made application to open a charter school. The State Board of Education was the authorizer. This legislation transfers that to the Department of Education. So that means the Department of Education will conduct those hearings. Now, there's a provision in Act 509 that allows, you know, we would take these to the State Board for final approval. The Board could say, State Department, we don't agree with you. We want to conduct our own hearing. So that provision is still in there.
Originally, Republican State Representative Mark Viviano, District 46, Searcy, filed the bill to create a 5-member independent charter school commission, removing the power entirely from the Department of Education to energize what he characterized as a lethargic charter authorization process. That concept was cut. And Phyllis Stewart said the state has evolved efficiencies as a charter authorizer outside of the Arkansas Board of Education.
Well, a few years ago, or maybe a couple of years ago, the department began what we call our Charter Review Council. Prior to that, it was just an internal group from within the department that reviewed those applications and then presented to the board the application, and the board had to conduct a more thorough evaluation of the application, and then, you know, they would vote to authorize it or not. A couple of years ago, Dr. Kimbrell instituted the Charter Review Council, and so we have streamlined the process to somewhat.
But under the new law, the former review council will dissolve, and a new review panel will be appointed by Commissioner Kimbrell, likely with some of the same players, Phyllis Stewart said. The Education Department will conduct deeper reviews, again subject to the Education Board as the appellate body. Arkansas is among 5 states with just 1 authorizing entity. California has more than 300. Authorizers can range from universities, nonprofits, independent chartering boards, local or state education agencies, and even municipalities. Out of 50 million American K-12 students, more than 2 million attend a charter school. 9 states, including Alabama, Vermont, and Montana, bar them altogether. In Arkansas, 12,691 students out of nearly 472,000 participate in school choice. Also enacted this session is the Public School Choice Act of 2013. Act 1227 repeals the Public School Choice Act of 1989. That law was struck down in federal court last year as unconstitutional, with a U.S. district judge citing that race should not be at issue. The decision is currently under appeal. Certain Arkansas schools, especially in Pulaski County, operate under court-ordered desegregation. Arkansas Department of Education Chief of Staff Phyllis Stewart said the 2013 version expands school choice options.
Yes, Public School Choice Act of 2013 is for out-of-district transfers. Schools that believe they are operating under a desegregation court order can choose to opt out of this process. They have to file with the Department of Education their resolution, you know, asking to be exempt from this process. The department would then post those that have said that they need to be exempt from the process on our website so that parents and other school districts could see that these districts are not participating in the choice.
The new law does limit the number to 3% of any district's student population. The originating bill was sponsored by Republican State Senator Johnny Key from Mountain Home. Act 1227 went into effect April 16th. So far, five districts, including Camden, Fairview, Blytheville, El Dorado, and Hope, have requested exemption from the law, which will expire in 2 years, to accommodate the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeal decision. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This week, Mark Sanford, the same guy who skipped out in the governor's office to see his Argentine mistress while saying he was hiking the Appalachian Trail, just got elected to Congress. How did he do it? By putting together a coalition of staunch conservatives and fans of our show. I'm Peter Segal with a big thanks for the material on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, tomorrow morning at 9 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, Efron White with a brand new song called Pressure Change. It's really good.
Excellent.
Okay, that's coming up. The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, also known as SONA, is looking for the region's most talented singers and performers. Anyone of any age may apply. Winners of the talent search will be featured at SONA's Christmas concert December 14th. Later this year, of course, at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. You can submit a photo and an MP3 recording by September 10th, and you send it to by email to info@sonamusic.org.
Does it have to be a Christmas song?
That's a very good question. I'm looking at this note that I received just this morning.
And it doesn't say.
It doesn't say. So I think, you
for
know,
more
if
information,
you can, right, yeah,
contact them.
Or go to the SONA website.
Probably doesn't have to be Christmas.
No, I mean,
was just curious.
Sure. If it's going to be for the Christmas concert.
Sure.
Yeah.
Basically, I think they just want to see that you can sing.
Exactly.
Or hear that you can sing, not see.
Right. I think it's interesting that after they invited me to be part of last year's, now they're asking for submissions ahead of time. Okay. All right. Let's test these people. The University of Arkansas Razorback softball team in the SEC tournament for the first time since 2010 dropped their first game of the tournament yesterday to the Missouri Tigers, 8-0 in five innings. That tournament's being played in Lexington, Kentucky.
Well, good luck to them.
Yes.
In the remaining games.
They come home now.
Okay.
Because it's a single elimination tournament. They'll wait to see if they have an NCAA tournament berth. Thinking they will. They'll find out their seed during the NCAA selection show that takes place Sunday night at 9, and it will be broadcast live on ESPNU.
Is single elimination unusual? I feel like I usually hear double elimination in baseball and softball. Or maybe just baseball.
And some degree softball as well. Mm-hmm. What you also run into, now remember there are more teams in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
They don't all get an invite. But you run into rainy weather at this time of year, and since the selection show is Sunday night at 9,
you
really can't afford to get backed
time
up. So it's just a one.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think they will get a bid.
Okay.
They did last year, and they didn't even make the SEC tournament last year.
So that looks good. Okay. Looks good for them.
Finally, another programming note. Mike Shirky, host of the Pick and Post, is going to feature Susan Werner's new CD, Hayseed, and Rebecca Frazier's When We Fall, some great bluegrass on the Pick and Post that Saturday night from 7 until 9.
Okay, I look forward to that.
Tomorrow, an Australian export will be on stage for three performances inside Star Theater at Walton Arts Center. The show Boats is a tale of two mariners and their lifelong friendship. There are two actors, Jeff Michael and Quinn Griggs. We'll meet them in a moment, as well as puppetry, inventive use of everyday objects as props, and a soundtrack that's partly created on the spot with the use of two microphones. One of the mics is more or less a standard issue microphone used by the actors to record their own sounds that are then looped for use throughout the show.
And the other one is a hydrophone. It's a phone especially designed to go underwater. So that gives you a hint about at least one of the sound effects we make with it, where there is water involved and you get a nice gurgling sound, amongst other things, and also picks up vibration very well.
That's Quinn Griggs, one of the two actors in the Terrapin Theatre production of Boats. He says the sound effects created, both by the underwater microphone and by their voices, mesh into storms used to tell the story. Quinn's partner on stage is Jeff Nickel. Jeff, Cleveland-born and now a resident of Tasmania, says Boats respects the intelligence of younger patrons. He says Finnegan Kruckmeyer's script allows for imagination to play a big role.
It also, I think, it appreciates the nuance existing in story that you don't have to actually, every story can benefit from multiple readings. So it doesn't all have to be crystal clear and all laid down for you in the first go. I mean, a lot of us do only read a book once or see a film once. But certainly for us, it's great that this show has a lot of depth to it because we're performing it all the time. But also because it doesn't talk down to students or children, it also doesn't, it really meets them at their level. There's some sadness in the show and there's some difficult moments, but I think because it's addressed sometimes metaphorically or in figurative language, but also alluded to, there are lots of audience members who, for them, that might just sort of go over their heads, and they don't necessarily realize that because maybe they're not necessarily astute or emotionally involved enough to actually grasp that, but that doesn't mean it's any less of a story for them.
There is theatrical magic going on from start to finish. A circus emerges from a jacket. A bird is crafted out of string and flies overhead. And a hat is transformed into an island. And there's physical work, too. At one point, Jeff ends up on Quinn's shoulders.
There are a few moves where they counterbalance or throw each other about. and there is one where we get a too high, which basically Jeff stands on my shoulders and continues to tell the story from up high.
So all you need to pull off the show is some balance, plenty of concentration, puppetry skills, and an ability to make these seemingly impossible seem real in front of an audience just a few feet away. Sometimes the actors perform the piece as many as three times a day, and Quinn has been in more than 300 separate performances, both here and in Australia. It has yet, he says, become the least bit boring or tiresome. He's grateful it's a complex show.
And I'm also really grateful that there's a lot of doing in it, because it means that the acting becomes just another layer and something that's really enjoyable. Just to complement all the physical activity that we do on stage. And it is a physically demanding show. We have to warm up for at least half an hour before the show so that, you know, we make sure that everything happens smoothly and we don't hurt ourselves or anything in the show.
The Terrapin Theatre production of Boats has already been staged for school groups 9 times this week at Walton Arts Centre. There are 3 public performances tomorrow, 10, noon, and 2. More information about the theatre company can be found at terrapin.org.au. Remember, it's an Australian outfit. And more about the particular shows tomorrow can be found at waltonartscentre.org. It is Friday, May 10th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us on the phone is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you, Becca?
I want you to know that there's something cool going on tomorrow in Fayetteville. And, of course, it made me think of New Orleans, because everything cool makes me think of New Orleans.
Right.
Fair. It's not food. It's not music. It's a house.
Oh, really?
More specifically, a condo.
Okay.
You know the ones with the wrought iron balconies overlooking the Fayetteville Square that we look at and go, gee, I wish I knew who lived there and I could see it?
Yes.
Well, you can.
Oh.
This one belongs to Leslie and Ted Belden. It's part of 5 houses on the Washington Elementary tours of homes tomorrow.
Oh, good.
And it's gorgeous. 2,200 square feet with hardwood floors, and it's all open, and there's a huge fireplace that takes advantage of the full height of the building, and there's exposed brick that they think probably dates back to right after the Civil War when Fayetteville was rebuilt.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
And a huge roof deck overlooking, you can look south and see toward Fort Smith. Absolutely beautiful.
And this is part of the tour.
This is part of the Washington Elementary Tour of Homes, and it also includes a house, a new house right by Wilson Park, a house on Highland Avenue, mm-hmm. Frank and Jen Whitehead Broyles' house on Lafayette, and 5 Mount Nord.
Ah.
It will be so much fun. It's from noon to 5 on Saturday, and tickets are $20, well, before the event, which is too late now, I guess, $25 Saturday at any of the homes.
Okay.
And also this weekend, it's the last weekend of Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
At Rogers Little Theater.
a dramedy about women and how their wardrobes reflect the important moments of their lives. 8 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday. And Sunday, of course, is Mother's Day.
Yes.
Last weekend for Next to Normal, the Broadway musical about a suburban mother fighting to keep her family together. That's 7:30 today, 2 and 7:30 Saturday, and 2 and 7 Sunday, presented by Theater Squared at the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
And for kids and their moms, Arts Life Theater is doing The Little Mermaid.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, Kyle
complete
got
with
to
music.
See some of their rehearsals the other day.
That's right.
Should be great fun. 7 o'clock today, 2 and 7 Saturday, and 2 on Sunday at the University of Arkansas Global Campus Auditorium on the Fayetteville Square. Tickets are $8 to $12. The Artrageous Parade has been rescheduled to 2 o'clock Saturday in downtown Eureka Springs.
Right.
And on Sunday, there's a Mother's Day concert featuring American Indian flutist John Tuhawks at 2 o'clock at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. And it is my favorite word.
Free.
Exactly. And one more offering for mom and the kids. We're going on a bear hunt, adapted from Michael Rosen's award-winning book. 2 o'clock Sunday at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, and it might as well be free. It's $5.
Yeah, that's a heck of a price.
So that ought to get you through the weekend and let you be nice to mom.
And just in case mom likes to see cars run into each other, the Ozark Demolition Derby is Saturday night at Parsons Stadium in Springdale.
Oh, how did I not know this?
Yeah.
Is one of you driving in the Demolition Derby, or?
I really want to.
So do I. But we need to talk.
KUAF insurance will not cover Antoinette in the...
I have my own insurance.
Okay, all right.
I don't know if our plain old insurance will cover this,
yeah,
but
that's
we'll
a
talk,
good point.
Antoinette.
Okay.
We'll talk.
Okay, we'll talk. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And, of course, Sunday is Mother's Day. Ozarks at Large's Meredith Martin Motes has been a mother for a few years now, and she's thinking this weekend about the traditions associated with the holiday.
In old photo albums and shoeboxes, there are several photos of my mother and her mother wearing corsages. In old photo albums and shoeboxes, there are several photos of my mother and her mother wearing corsages on Mother's Day. Usually they're standing in front of the lilac bush or the deep purple irises, my mother wearing a red corsage, and her mother a white one. I distinctly remember my mother explaining the tradition to me one Sunday morning as we were sitting in the Old Church of Christ building on Union Street in Dardanelle. Red corsages were worn by women whose mothers were still living, she explained. Women who had lost their mothers wore white. Looking over at my grandmother, Golda Faye Taylor McRoy, who must have been nearing 70 at the time, I thought about what her white corsage meant. I began to realize that she hadn't always been my grandmother. She was once a young woman with a living mother, and before that, a young child like myself. I remember wondering if she missed her mother, and I began to ponder how long it had been since she'd worn a red flower. Then I looked around at the rest of the congregation, and I noticed just how many other women were also wearing white flowers, some of them even young, like the age of my mother. Pinned on all their dresses, these simple flowers spoke volumes about the aging process, the continuity and complexity of motherhood, and the mysteries we carry with us. I remember wondering if I'd ever wear a red flower of my own. Turns out I never did. My mother died before my own children were born, so these days I wear white too. Wearing a flower for Mother's Day isn't the popular tradition it once was, nor does it even date back to the founding of Mother's Day, which began with an Appalachian woman named Anna Jarvis. In 1858, she called for the creation of what she dubbed Mother's Work Days to bring people together to improve sanitation and clean up the polluted waterways in the region, which were leading to many needless deaths. Nearly two decades later in Boston, poet, suffragist, and staunch pacifist Julia Ward Howe asked mothers to fight for peace. Following on the heels of the bloody Franco-Prussian War, Howe called for a special day to bring mothers together to organize against further wars. But it wasn't until many years later that Mother's Day became recognized as an official holiday. Anna Jarvis's daughter, also named Anna, recalled her mother once saying, quote, "I hope and pray that someone, sometime, will found a memorial Mother's Day. There are many days for men, but none for mothers," end quote. The younger Jarvis sought to honor her mother's activism and began to push for such a holiday throughout West Virginia and beyond. In 1914, President Woodrow Wilson designated the second Sunday in May as the official Mother's Day. According to historians, it deeply troubled the younger Anna Jarvis that the holiday became commercialized, and she actively fought against this commercialization until her death. Each family, each community, has their own way of celebrating Mother's Day, and subsequent generations will form traditions of their own. What about you? Do you wear a corsage? Do you visit cemeteries for Decoration Day on Mother's Day or engage in any kind of other community work? Do you have shoeboxes full of pictures of your own family wearing Mother's Day corsages? I'd love to hear your stories. You can visit me online and find more information about Julia Ward Howe, both Anna Jarvis's, and photos of corsages past at BoiledDownJuice.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Meredith Martin Motes.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The KUAF website giveaway is offering tickets to the music festival Rocklahoma in Pryor, Oklahoma, May 24th through the 26th. The winners will be announced on Friday, May 17th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Other giveaways include tickets to Wakarusa and Thunder on the Mountain. Separate registration for each event is required. Information and registration are available on the web at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. With me, Efren White, singer, songwriter, man about Northwest Arkansas. Efren, we looked at the calendar and realized that in 2013 we hadn't invited you back, so we're taking care of that now.
Yeah, it's about time. I missed you.
Well, we said once it snows in May, we'll get Efren White back in the studio. You are perhaps busier as a singer and songwriter now than you've ever been. True?
Perhaps, yeah.
Because it seems like if one follows you on Facebook like I do, you are playing a lot.
I am. I had kind of a slow winter, but it's really picked up now. I'm just really having a hard time finding slots for some people who are asking me to play. So that's a good thing.
I was going to say, nice problem to have. I want to ask you about something that you kind of organize, which is the Efren's open mic. Tell me about this.
Yeah, it's an open mic that I host every Wednesday night at Foghorn's Wings. I call it the 50 Flavors open mic after their slogan that they have over 50 flavors of wings.
Right, and now there are a couple of Foghorns in Fayetteville.
Yeah, there are. This one's on College Avenue. Right. It's 2175. North College. And like I say, I do it every Wednesday night from 7 to 10. And we like to get all the musicians to come out that we can get, because the more the better.
Is there a format to it?
You just come and you sign up, and depending on how many people we have signed up, we'll give them 2 to 3 songs. Lately, we haven't had enough participation, so they've been getting lots of songs, like 30-minute sets.
Well, it's been cold of late. I think that'll probably change when.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know, there are famous open mics in Nashville and Austin and Memphis, places like that. Do you find that there are people out there with talent that you didn't know about?
Oh, yeah. There's tons of talent out there, much of it just stays hidden in the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, and so the open mic's the perfect opportunity to, if you're a closet musician, to get out and try your stuff out on some real people.
Generally a friendly, welcoming sort of audience.
Yeah.
So you said it's a little winter, it's picked up now. Still writing, I assume.
I'm still writing. Been writing quite a bit lately.
Have you ever tried to analyze what sparks a lot of writing as opposed to what isn't a lot of writing, period?
It's basically sitting down at the desk and doing it.
Which is harder than it sounds, I bet.
Yeah, it is for me. I'm kind of like John Prine, I found out. He says if somebody comes up to him while he's writing and wants to go get a hot dog, he'll definitely go for the hot dog.
I'm going to ask you to sing a song here in a minute. But first, one of the best things about having Efron White in the studio is to look at all the accoutrement. Because, now, we've talked about your guitar before. It has been with you a while. There's a hole underneath, and you've got autographs on it. How old is this guitar?
It's really not that old. I bought it new in 1996.
Well, that isn't that old, but it's been used.
Yeah, it looks a lot older.
And then the guitar case, which is completely covered in stickers and bumper stickers. Do people just come up to you now and say, "Hey, I've got a sticker that I want you to put on your case?"
Yeah, they do.
Do you have a process of what goes on and what doesn't?
Not much, one. but it is hard to find a place to put one now, obviously. So I usually use them for wherever I need a repair. So
a repair on the case?
Yeah.
So the case has got some holes in it, too?
The case does. The whole bottom over here is coming out of it. But
anyway. And then finally, just before we began our conversation, you mentioned that you were going to play harmonica on the song, and you got out a Crown Royal bag, right? And how many harmonicas do you have in there?
There's only five, actually.
Oh, only five, okay.
Yeah, only five.
Well, which one are you going to about to play for us here?
A C harmonica.
Okay. What song have you decided to play for us?
It's a brand new song.
Excellent.
It's called Pressure Change. And you want me to start?
You bet.
Record low. take no stock in what the weatherman say.
I really like that.
Thank you.
So, without getting too technical, when you're writing a song and you realize that you're kind of a theme of what you want to say will be incorporated with weather terms or whatever, do you make a list of things you might use, or do you just kind of let it come to you?
I do make a little list sometimes of things that might come.
Yeah.
And other than that, I do just let it come to me and hopefully just let it flow.
Gosh, that one flowed very well. I'll never understand how someone like you can do that, but I'm glad you can. I'm glad no one...
I can't understand it either.
And I guess that's part of the... Don't try to understand it too much?
I guess so.
Well, go ahead.
You know, that's one... I did want to mention, I am doing a songwriting workshop at the library coming up in June. And so I got to figure some of this stuff out before then. anyway.
Have you led a songwriting workshop before? You have, haven't you?
I've done
you
little...
You participated, yeah.
I've participated. I've given like one-hour talks on what I know. But this time I got to do two days, 2 hours a piece. Yeah, 2 hours a piece, I think. That's 4 hours.
That is 4 hours. Yeah. Which do you think is harder, writing a very good song like that one or trying to decide what you're going to do in a writer's workshop?
Trying to do the workshop.
Yeah, I can believe that. Any plans for the next CD? Still a little premature on that?
A little premature. Okay. Been tossing some things around with my new bass player, who's probably going to produce the next one as well. That's John Davies, who's known around here for playing with the Kate Brothers, and he plays now with Earl and them. Mm-hmm. So they get him a lot of weekends, but they let me have him sometimes. He's been really kind of putting his brain to work on making my next CD. So we might start that in about the fall.
Okay. Well, tell him that Pressure Change should be on that CD.
I will. As a matter of fact, we're thinking the title of the CD might be Pressure Change.
I endorse that.
That might be the title cut.
So the open mics every Wednesday night at Foghorn.
Right.
On College. When else can people see and hear you?
Right now I'm playing every Friday night, almost, at Mojitos. Mojitos Mexican Grill, mm-hmm. over on Joyce Street.
Yep.
And also, beginning this Sunday, I'll be playing at Mojitos
on
too.
Oh.
Every other Sunday, beginning this Sunday,
okay.
May the 12th.
Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Just by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to be eating a lot of Mexican food this summer.
There are worse ways to spend a summer.
And it is a patio gig, so if there's rain or anything or snow, it could happen, you know.
A week ago I would have laughed, but.
Yeah, we'll have to make arrangements if it snows. It's a patio gig. It's a really, really pretty nice patio with a nice stage, and I love playing there, and I'm going to be playing probably a lot solo, but also sometimes with my fiddle and mandolin player, Richard Hartrick,
mm-hmm.
and also John will show up. John's going to be playing with me, I think, most Sundays, and then sometimes all three of us, which I call the band, will be playing, so... You never know, really.
Well, and people can also go to EfronWhite.com.
They can.
And that gives you more information, things yep. like that. Buy your CDs there as well?
You can get to them from there.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Efron, thanks so much for coming in again.
Well, thank you.
All right, appreciate it.
See you, Kyle.
Brian Goldman was always a perfect student. A
classmate of mine in high school once said that Brian Goldman would study for a blood test.
Now that he's a doctor, he teaches med students.
Many of them have that look in their eyes that they're pristine. They've never made a mistake, and they never will. Of course, until it happens.
Making mistakes. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You can hear the TED Radio Hour Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, White Rock.
White Rock right over there by, well, not right by Fort Smith, but close.
Well, I'm looking at the one that's just west of Fayetteville.
Okay.
Yeah, out towards Weddington Woods.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Let's see. Christina Thomas and I will have Weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has, by herself, Monday's edition of Ozarks. And it's a packed show.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to talk to Stephanie Schulte at the University of Arkansas about her new book called Cached. It's a kind of a history of the internet and global culture. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys all sampled some honey yesterday, and we'll hear about that as well.
We will.
Don Steinkraus.
Don Steinkraus came in and... We had ourselves a honey tasting, so that was fun. And then I'll have a story on the, I guess that's on Tuesday.
Right.
We'll have a story on the Spiral Wetland as part of Artisphere.
Now that you talked to Stacey Levy about that. She's the artist.
Stacey Levy. Mm-hmm.
About that yesterday out at Veterans Park. What does it look like?
It's, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like a spiral.
Hence the name.
I mean, it's this floating wetlands with native plants, and it's in the shape of a spiral, and yeah.
And can you see it from the spillover dam? Is that the best
place? Yeah, I was standing on the dam.
Okay.
But that's the best place to see it, I think.
And did you get, because it's in the water,
so
it's like this living piece of art.
It is.
And did you get into the conversation with her about how she did it? The construction?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we talked about that a little bit, and you can hear more about that on Tuesday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Okay. Any plans for this weekend?
Yes. I've got some graduation / going away party things and Mother's Day and all of that good stuff.
And you know what we should also say is goodbye to John Schlois.
We should.
We don't want to.
No.
John, who has been with us now for about a year and a half, 2 years,
mm-hmm.
He'll be doing all his graduation stuff tomorrow.
Yeah. So congratulations on graduation, John. And then, he has an internship out in Seattle this summer.
At the Post-Intelligencer newspaper. So congratulations on that. But we will miss him.
Yes, very much. And so everybody out there having graduation stuff this weekend, be safe, have fun. If you're still looking for something to do, may I recommend Next to Normal? This is the last weekend. Went
yes,
to
it
that
is.
Last night.
How was that? I'm sorry I didn't ask.
Oh, no, you're fine. I enjoyed it. It was. I don't know that I had seen a musical at Theater Square before. I know they've had them, but I don't think that I had been to them. So.
All right. So that's got another weekend to go.
Mm-hmm.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.